You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here at Studio Jeans, doing it up at your mom's house. I'm Ryan Sickler. Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. Going to hit you with a few dates real quick. Edmonton, May 16th through the 18th, and I got a handful of June dates with Tom Segura, Richmond, Maryland, Atlantic City, Tulsa, Wichita, Kansas City. I will be at the House of Comedy in Minnesota in August, and there's a Baltimore date in September I'm letting you know about now. So go to my website. You can get the calendar right there, get all the tickets. And I want to always say thank you for the positive feedback. Please subscribe, download, and review the show. Go over to the Your Mom's House YouTube page. We're bringing you video for this show every Tuesday. The website is thehoneydewpodcast.com. You can get all social media links there. The merch is there. You can email me at honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. This episode of The Honeydew is brought to you by Postmates. When you need red wine at 4 p.m., sushi at 9 p.m., a breakfast burrito at 8 a.m., and ibuprofen at 10 a.m., Postmate it. Postmates is your personal food delivery, grocery delivery, whatever kind of delivery service, all year round. Anything you're craving, Postmates can deliver. They're the largest on-demand network in the U.S. and offer delivery from all the restaurants, grocery, and convenience stores, and traditional retailers you could possibly want or need. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, Postmates will bring you what you need within the hour. No more trips to the store. You don't even have to know where the store is. Postmates will deliver anything to you. I had a barbecue. We had one going over here at my place, and we ran out of propane. And guess what? We Postmated propane. They showed up with the propane, saved the barbecue. How about that? Propane, guys. Anything you need. No more trips to the store. Download the app for iOS or Android for free, and browse local restaurants and businesses and track your delivery in real time. So here's the deal. This is a really good deal. For a limited time, Postmates is giving my listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days, okay? $100 in free delivery for your first week, okay? To start your free deliveries, here's what you got to do. You got to download the app and use code HONEYDEW, HONEYDEW. That's code HONEYDEW for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it, download Postmates, and save with code HONEYDEW. And if you're new to the show, what we're doing here is highlighting the lowlights. It's triumph through tragedy, and these are the stories behind the storytellers. And today I'm excited to introduce to you a guest who I wanted to get on the Crab Feast for a long time. We never made it happen, but he's here on the Honeydew. Ladies and gentlemen, Doug Benson.
Hey! Is it, what is the Crab Feast, like a done thing?
It is a done thing.
Oh,
you know, we've talked about, Jay and I have talked about doing like maybe an anniversary or
if you do a special, I would love to participate, because that done. Is weird that I never did that.
It is. But I'm glad you're here, brother.
I was always aware of it and doing it, and Jay came on my show, and so yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right. We'll get you on one of the special one-offs.
I, you know, as much as I love podcasting, I kind of get my fill of it through all of my many podcasts. So I'm guesting on others' podcasts. I have been over the last few years doing that less, and I've just started picking it up a little bit now and going out and doing other people's shows, because it, for one thing, it's fun, but it's also everybody does my shows, so I should, you know, also do theirs.
You can't always have the party at your house. You know what I mean? That was us growing up.
Or your mom's house.
Now you're at our mom's house. Will you promote, please, plug whatever you want. You said you have a lot of podcasts. Please tell everybody everything you want.
Doug Loves Movies, if you're into movies and movie trivia. I got Getting Doug with High, if you're into marijuana and marijuana news. And I've got, I know I got a third one. Dining with Doug and Karen, or now it's called Dining with D and K. We streamlined it. That's a food podcast, and those are all available on iTunes. But also, Getting Doug with High is also on video that you can watch on my YouTube channel. youtube.com/DougBenson. And all of my road dates are at DougLovesMovies.com. I'd say the biggest one coming up is every year on Mother's Day, I go to the Comedy Works in downtown Denver and do Doug Loves Movies at 420. And awesome. We pack it out every year. And you know how Mother's Day is for comedians out on the road. It sucks.
Yeah.
Nobody goes out. But I figured out that in Denver, most people that live there, especially fans of mine, their moms aren't in the same town. They moved to Denver.
Right. And now their mom's somewhere
to up. Get high. But do you get moms?
I bet you
Doug
do.
Shows.
I bet you get moms that come out and come up to you and be like, I came with my son or whatever.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah. That absolutely happens. But, you know, it's a, for some reason, the.
It's an orphan's Mother's Day.
The audience tends to be kind of young at my, my shows.
That's great. I love that.
Yeah. I'm cool with it, but it is, I will get weirded out if somebody that to me is old, you know, cause I'm old. So like, so if I think somebody's old, that's like, you know, they're like, really, what are they even doing out of the house? You know? So I don't encounter too much of that, but it is fun when it does happen. I do the 311 cruises, you know, the band 311.
Yeah, I didn't know about all these cruises. I just started learning, like, Impractical Jokers have a cruise. Mm-hmm. I think John Mayer does a cruise. So I keep hearing about these cruises. What's that cruise like?
Rock and comedy cruises are, you know, one of the best things that ever happened to me because, you know, you get to go on a cruise to some awesome place and the weather's usually awesome. But then on these rock and comedy cruises, the boats are full of entertainment. That's good. You know, like great comedians. And in the case of the, rock, ships, you know, like the 311 cruises, they have lots of great bands, that are also playing on the ship. So it's like a music festival, just all in one ship. And it's just exciting to all be, together for, you know, a few days. But Peanut, the bass player in 311, his father you know, comes on every cruise, and he even wears a shirt that says I'm Peanut's dad. and he you know, and everybody on the cruise loves him, and he's just out partying with everybody all the time. And he comes to the comedy shows. And at this last one, I made fun of the fact that, you know, I said, you know, cause the shirt is looking pretty nasty. Cause he said the same shirt that he wears every time for like, it's been six cruises and they do them every other year. So he's probably had this shirt for like a decade.
Year. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I made fun of his shirt, like said somebody get him a new one. And then I ran into him the next day on the boat, and he was at the comedy show, and he said, you know, he ran right up to me because he has several shirts that say I'm Peanut's dad. Because different people have made them for him over the years.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So he doesn't have to wear the same shirt, gross shirt all the time.
12 years, that's longer than any relationship I've ever fucking had.
But t-shirts will go for forever.
If you get a good one.
How old is this one you're wearing?
Well, it looks older than it is. It's probably 4 years old. Yeah, I bought it like that. No, it's a little age. It's probably 4 or 5, yeah.
But I have some t-shirts I probably have worn for over a decade.
Yeah.
They can be pretty amazing t-shirts.
So I...
let's hear it for t-shirts.
Let's hear it for fucking t-shirts. I hit everybody up when they come on, and I tell them about what the show's about, and it's an opportunity to talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. And I love when people bring in heavy stuff, and I love when people come in with stuff that is on the lighter side. And I'm not sure where this actually falls in, but you said you had a story you wanted to talk about, and it involves a dog. And I want to hear yours, because I have one that happened to my brother.
Okay. Well, you know, I was thinking about traumatic incidents, you know, and I've had plenty of them in my life, but one that was upsetting, not just the initial event, but then two subsequent things that happened were also unsettling and frustrating. So it starts like this. I have a cousin. She's got a husband. They have a house out in Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm working at the Tempe Improv. You know, I get into town a night early so I could do media the next day. And
so how old are you? Is this like 10 years ago?
This is 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay, not that long.
So maybe longer. I'm terrible with years, but it's, you know, it's fairly recent. And so I go out. The idea is I'm going to go out and see the house and have dinner with her. And they also have a family friend who's a young man who really likes comedy, so he's going to come and have dinner too, and, you know, probably chew my ear about stand-up comedy and how it works and how to become one, all that stuff. And, you know, a perfectly pleasant experience is ahead, but, you know, I had to have a rental car and I had to drive, like, Phoenix and Scottsdale touch each other,
yeah,
but
I was just there, yeah.
But yeah, but from one end of one to one end of the other, it can be an hour drive. Mm-hmm. So, so I go out there and I'm in the house, and it's, you know, it's in this beautiful community out in the desert with lots of cactuses and stuff, and they have a family dog that I have not met, a cute little white dog that now I can't even tell you what kind of dog it is, because I've never even really...
It's a lap dog, though, like small dog.
Small, it's between lap and would you say regular size?
It's medium.
But just really white, and also what dog is known for going batshit insane and mean when it gets older, but still looks adorable.
Yeah, like a Cocker Spaniel or something.
Yeah, it's like white and fluffy and just adorable. So I'm standing in the, you know, they have these tall windows leading out to the backyard area, and I'm standing at one of them, and this dog is diving at the window with all fours and barking and baring its teeth, and it's just clearly wants to eat me alive. But I'm on the other side of this window.
Like those zoo windows.
Yeah. This dog is just going at this window, and I'm just like laughing, and like, I feel bad because, like, wow, this dog's really, you know, really thinks I'm an intruder, even though I'm hanging out with the family.
Yeah.
Nothing's crazy going on, you know, because, like, when I was a teenager, I always thought it was funny if I like raised my hand like I was going to hit my mother. Our family dog loved my mom the most of all of us, so anything bad happening
near her
would piss off that dog so much. So sometimes I, you know, it's really fucked up.
I just be like,
yeah, it's messed up to pretend to hit your mother, but I think she got the spirit of it. I think she knew that I was just trying to make the dog get mad at me. So the dog's just coming at this window, and my cousin, she even says, she's terrible with, this dog's terrible with strangers, and you just can't go near it. I'm like, okay, great. This doesn't make me uncomfortable at all. Now we're going to sit down and have a whole meal with this dog wanting to get in here and kill me. So
it's just bouncing outside the window.
Oh, my God. It was, you know, but the second I turned my back, her husband, who, when it's just them at home, that dog is inside the house. So he just, without thinking about it, opens up a door and lets the dog into the house.
Oh, shit. But do you know that?
Fucking, as soon as it's attached, as soon as its teeth are in my skin, that's when I get the news.
Oh, you let the dog in.
Oh, you decided to let it in to attack me. I'm so glad I'm standing in the position I was, because it could have just as easily been my junk that the dog just tore
so
into.
So it beelined in and went right for you.
Right,
like, not
into
even
my
fucking
leg.
Not just barking, no warning.
Through the jeans, into my skin, bleeding. You know, they pulled them off. They pulled the dog off of me right away.
They pulled them off.
Yeah.
You said it was a small dog. You couldn't get it off? Are you shaking? What are you doing?
No, I mean, they grabbed its collar or whatever, you know. But it wasn't...
but he was in there,
it
huh?
wasn't that small.
Holy shit.
You know, medium size. So, you know, then that's an awkward rest of the night. She, like, got some, you know, rubbing alcohol or something, and whatever you put on fresh wounds, and we looked at it, made sure it wasn't like deep enough that I would have to, you know, check and see if it got infected or anything. And it healed fine, you know, and it wasn't, strangely, wasn't that painful, but she gave me like a bag of some sort of, you know, she threw a bunch of pills into a plastic bag and gave it to me and said these, you know, this, I don't know what it was, but, you know, something that she got after a surgery or something. So it was probably something pretty strong.
Some hand-me-down drugs.
But I didn't try, you know, but I never took them because I never, you know, I just don't, I don't take anything for anything other than I just smoke weed and drink alcohol and wait for the pain to go away.
So, just wait it out.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like if I have a headache or something.
I'm the same
way.
I mean? Yeah.
Sometimes a good night's sleep will just get rid of that headache, you know? So let's get drunk and high and go to sleep. But here's the messed up thing is that, like I said, we have the rest of the meal and there's a lot of, you know, we're sorry. And a lot of me saying, well, you know, you didn't do it on purpose. What are you going to do? You know, I can't really be mad at anybody. I can't even be mad at that dog. That dog's clearly insane. And, you got a crazy ass dog here. And, so then like a few days later, I get a voice message on my phone, which first of all, I'm already irritated because I don't do that anymore. It's all texts and emails.
Right. Yeah. I'm learning.
So as soon as I get
a
voicemail, I'm like, oh, great. A voicemail. What's this going to be about? And it's my cousin saying, can you please call me? There's something I need to tell you. And I'm like, what could she possibly need to tell me? She couldn't have just said in that message. So I call her back and she tells me, oh, we, you know, I forget the dog's name even now, but she goes, we put it down today. We, you know, we put it to sleep because of course, you know, if it's going to attack me like that in the home, hanging out with them, what if there's like a
kid comes
toddler
over.
Or what? Yeah. So it's just like that dog was too crazy to live, but why I didn't,
was it a rescue dog?
She didn't need to call me to tell me that, you know what I mean? Like, and I didn't have to have a conversation with her about it.
Yeah. Our dog is the last, you're the last person our dog will ever bite.
Yeah.
That's on your conscience.
Yeah,
forever.
You know, don't feel bad.
You're the straw that broke the camel. You're the
don't
straw that put
bad.
The dog down.
Yeah, don't feel bad that you're the one. You're the reason why we had to kill our family pet, our beloved pet. So I didn't love that part of the process.
Man, that was terrible.
And then I did a rock. And then I did a rock cruise. Oh, and forgot that those pills were in my bag. And when I got off the cruise in Miami, I got the full thrown in a room, looked through all my shit.
Oh, shit. Okay. I see.
And then they tested it. Because they were just white pills. And they go, what are these? And I go, I don't know. My cousin gave them to me when a dog bit me.
They're like, you might have rabies. Take him to quarters. And they tested them.
So so it took forever, and they finally come back.
Are you
and go,
sitting there and just waiting, or do you see this shit?
They finally come back. I don't see them testing it, but I do see
them.
They're
not looking at you.
Like, yeah. No, but I do, you know, there's definitely a lot of cops around, and, you know, one of them was really nice to me, like, kept kind of being like, don't worry about it. This is, it's going to be fine.
Did any of them know you?
Yeah, the one that knew me was nice.
I love
you know. This guy, don't worry about it. Because the guy was pulling shit out of my bag that they could have also got me for, like vape pens and stuff. But the other cop would go, that's no big, don't worry about that. It was those pills that the other guy couldn't go, don't worry about
it. Right, yeah.
Because nobody could identify what they were.
Yeah, right. I like your show, but I like my job and my life better. Yeah.
So they went and tested the pill and came back, and the guy then went and tested the pill, was clearly like crestfallen, like he was sad that it was just something.
Just aspirin.
It was just some. It was something.
Just aspirin.
It was over the counter enough that they couldn't. Or I had
it's white ibuprofen. I've never seen it before.
Small enough batch. You know, maybe I had the, you know, an amount you can have of whatever that was, but they let me go.
Fuck that. That's scary.
And that was a dog there too. That it was the one that got me, in trouble, and it was such a cute, happy looking dog.
What happened?
You're just walking off, and you just get boom tossed.
Because what? What did the dog do?
They all grabbed me, and like I had a backpack on with my computer in it, and like they started taking that off, and
like
I got a little defensive because of my computer was in it. I just didn't want to, you know.
Yeah. Let that go.
And they just were like, you know, put your arms down. You know, like they made it very clear they were going to take the backpack off of me.
And everyone's seeing this as you're going off the
people
boat?
That are also getting off, maybe a handful maybe saw it. I didn't hear a lot from people about it, like, oh shit, what happened?
Yeah,
but the funniest thing with security in a cruise ship is the very first 311 cruise I did, the layout where people were waiting to go through security was such that you could see the people when they get through security. And so when I got through the metal detector and the bag search or whatever, when I got through that, all the other people waiting, they all applauded. I'm like, thanks, guys. like that's not going to make the security people.
Yeah, right. Like, you made it.
It's not TSA, but the cruise ships, it's like old school TSA, you know, where you just go through the metal detector. There's no X-ray.
Right.
And your bag goes through the belt.
It's like court.
Even a big bag, even like a full-size bag, they have a big enough belt that you just go through that way with it. Or I should say I did that because I was as an artist on the ship, you can do that. But the regular passengers have to check their bags outside, and then they put your bags, you know, next to your door inside, and they can, you know, look at them, look in them in the meantime. But for anybody who's concerned about it, the TSA does not care about your marijuana.
I just talked to them about it because I've been reading about it on the internet, and I went through this just when I was going to Phoenix. I just walk up to this guy, I go, let me ask you a question. You guys really will let us take weed? He's like, well, hold on a second. He's like, we don't let you, but if it's not gratuitous, if it's a personal amount, mm-hmm. we're not going to stop you and bother you with it. If you're trying to roll 3 pounds in a bag over here, then yeah, we're going to fucking bust you. But if it's a personal amount, we let you go. And they said, but you're at your own risk. If you're going to Dallas and Dallas doesn't fuck with that,
right.
They didn't, well, LA let me. They don't care at all. Like, it's take it.
Right.
That's it.
But it's still, you're walking off a plane, so there's no search at that point.
Right.
So as long as you don't
light
it on fire on the spot.
We came back from Jamaica.
Well, I'm not talking about foreign travel. I'm just talking about domestic.
Yeah, you're right. There's no one there.
There's no one going to
There's no one even making sure you're not stealing bags.
Off the plane. There's barely people checking the bags. Every once in a while, somebody will be like, do you have that ticket or whatever? But yeah, you're right. They're barely looking at that. So you can cruise out of there just fine. So that's it's funny that they say that because, you know, you don't really have to worry. I'm like, are you going to call ahead? Are you going to drop a dime?
Have you ever?
We can't bust you, but I've got friends in other cities.
Yeah, I'm going to call Nashville right now and let them know you're coming.
Yeah.
Have you always travel with it?
Not always. No, it was definitely once things started.
Me too. Before 9/11, I would fly with it. I'd just put it in my pants in a baggie, and I'd walk right through.
Yeah, yeah, shoving it. And as long as it was in plastic, you'd walk through that old school metal detector.
That's right.
Same one that they have for this cruise ship. So that's what I'm telling you if you're going on a cruise ship. Is that, you know, just don't have, you know, don't put your weed in a baggie that's also got a handful of change in it. Make sure there's no metal in your marijuana.
That's what I used to do, and there was one time where I just didn't bag it up really great, and I used to take my hoodie and ball it up and use it as a pillow, and I'd take the window seat, and I just didn't, like I said, it wasn't sealed all the way, and I just moved, and I just smelt it like, and this lady sitting next to me just looked over and gave me one of those. I just went to sleep. She didn't say anything.
Yeah, my bag, a lot of times my carry-on, when I unzip it to get something out, you know, you're in such close quarters there, like in coach, that like I know people are smelling my stinky stuff. But the TSA has been hilarious lately because for some reason my bag that I have weed in is getting pulled aside a lot for other things because I just have a lot of random junk in there. Like one time they pulled it aside because of a garage door opener.
How did that get in there?
I always have it because it's a garage door opener to my building, and okay. I just take it with me when I travel because then when I get home, I can definitely get into my garage. But you know, paranoid about leaving it in a car. So that, you know, but it's true that the TSA guys were passing it around and laughing.
Like, they're handing it all.
Like, why would he be traveling with this?
Because
at first they were like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know, because I guess you could think it's like a remote to set off a bomb.
Yeah, sure.
But why doesn't it, but why did this one group pick it out and it never, every other time it goes straight through? And this last time that they were looking through my bag, the guy just looked through a bunch of stuff. Like, it's like literally taking pipes and little canisters of weed, like a clear one even. Literally taking them, holding them, setting them down, just going through, checking everything. And then he finally just goes to me, do you got like a torch in here?
A torch?
And I go, no, there's a few lighters, but no torch. And he goes, all right. And then just puts the stuff back in, like gives up.
took your word for
it. It's like, I'm tired of just looking through these. Because I got so many stupid little random items, you know? Like, I've got
a pile up there, like, we got somebody doing a barbecue back in 21C with a torch right now. Not sure if we want to get a TSA heads up about the checks. Over. A torch.
Yeah, do you have a torch in here?
And no, he was like, no, fuck it. But nothing about the weed. Just right back in the bag.
Just a Morty doll. I had the guy hold up Morty doll and look at it.
You have the weirdest shit when you fly.
I've got, on the cruise ship, I got these pair of these gold sunglasses that have sideburns on them. So you're like instant Elvis if you put them on. And like, they're just looking through shit like that, that I don't take out of my bag because I don't need it for anything at home.
So you just leave it in there.
You know, I leave all my disguises. Yeah. It's just such
it
random.
It is weird. It's a garage remote, Elvis glasses, a torch.
Yeah.
It does sound
and
like
then just lots of weed products and like a hat and you know, and my headphones and my
checkbook,
like a random bunch of random it's my, you know, it's my random bag, like the one thing that if I have that, at least I've got, you know, a few things that
I
need.
Do you pre-check? TSA pre-check?
I haven't signed up for the program because for a long time, the United is like my frequent flyer airline. And for a long time, they would just give it to me themselves.
Oh, I see.
But then recently, TSA made it so, made it much more restricted. They don't just let the airlines just pick whoever they want randomly to be TSA pre. So I only get it like once in a while. But I've also just gotten very good at getting through security. There's one at LAX. If you just hang a hard left after they check your ID and just kind of go past a few lines, there's a line all the way on the end. This is in the United terminal. There's a line all the way in the end where they don't have the X-ray machine. They only have the old-fashioned one. So, you know, you could still have some stuff in your pockets and walk through and not set it off.
So that's what I want to go back.
So I do that.
I haven't yet flown with weed. Well, since they've said it's all right. But they just put it right back in the bag. They don't fuck with it at all.
And that's because they were secondary checking my bag. A lot of times it just goes through. The guy with the X-ray looks at it, and it goes through fine. Just for every once in a while, you either get pulled aside. They do random bag checks where the machine will just throw a bag to the side and say, check this one. Mm-hmm. And then they also do... you know, if there is something that they're wondering about what it is. That was another one that they pulled out of my bag one time was I had a big rubber bong that, like, in the bag must have looked more like a dildo. but it felt like one, too. It was like that kind of rubber. It's a really interesting bong that they just pulled it out. One of them said, what's this? And another one said, that's a pipe. And the first one said, oh, and put it back in my bag.
That's what I'm saying. I'm blown away by that. They do. They just put the weed and everything
back in. They
don't use
that. It's not like cops with just cause. They don't use like, oh, he's got a bong. We should search everything to find the weed.
They just want to know what that is.
They just want to know, what's this thing? That's a bong. Have a good day.
Free to go.
Yeah.
Yeah,
once they find what they're looking for, they don't keep going. Yeah, and it's my heart doesn't even race anymore when they do it. That's how sure I am that they're not going to care about the weed. It's gotten that casual, especially at LAX, but I find that to be the case everywhere. I still don't go crazy with it. I'll still play a fun game with myself where I have to try to smoke all the weed that people give me before before leaving town.
Dude, you have to get a lot of fucking weed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'd get more if I encouraged it. I don't really, you know, go out of my way to say, hey, give me weed. It just happens. And I love it. It's very cool. It's very cool. But I'm also glad. That's the other thing about being able to fly with it now is that, you know,
you bring it home.
You find that random joint in a pocket that you forgot about.
Oh, yeah.
And you traveled with it anyway. And you were real cocky because you didn't know it was there.
I'm still nervous to do it. I'm even nervous out on the streets when, you know, I remember being in Denver a few years ago and I was doing Comedy Works downtown. And after the show, I was outside with a few of the people working there and we were smoking a joint. And these two cops came down the alley and right away I was, you know, try to hide. And they were like, no. And they just walked right the fuck by and I couldn't get over that feeling. I don't know if I ever get used to that feeling.
My girlfriend and I saw a good one in Austin, Texas during this last South by Southwest. We were walking down an alley after just having smoked in one end of the alley, and we were like walking out of the alley, and it's a very busy alley during South by because it's just right behind 6th Street where all the activity is. So the alley's very busy. And we're walking along and we see a group of like 10 people in a circle, all smoking. And then we also see headed like right towards them, three cops with two guys in cuffs that they're arresting, but like the, you know, the not regular cop outfits, like almost like SWAT team outfits.
Like way over the top.
Like really, yeah, helmet. Really aggressive. Like, and they've got these guys. I mean, there's cops everywhere. So it's funny that they're smoking at all.
Yeah,
that they're
being horses.
That blatant about
yeah,
it.
Right.
Like me and my girlfriend were just kind of like passing it back and forth quickly in an alley. These guys are just chilling in the alley. And one of the three cops with carrying the two guys down the street just screams at them, pay attention.
That's why they got arrested for being stupid.
No, because then he was busy, so he couldn't arrest them. But he's just like, you guys, you know, like at least play the game a little bit
seriously.
Of pretending to worry about whether we would care or not.
Help us help you get high.
Yeah.
So you here's what I want to ask you, because you and I had crossed paths a while ago and not in comedy in the promo world. But what was your first job? What was the first job you had growing up?
Oh, it's funny you should ask, because I've been thinking about that because of the, everybody's tweeting. Five jobs I've had. Mm-hmm. So I broke it down into five jobs. My first five jobs, and then I also did my the five jobs that I did when I moved to Los Angeles to be in show business. And that was just sort of bragging because I was cocky enough to think I could just do jobs that have something to do with show business. And, you know, I mean, I bent the rules. I mean, I don't know necessarily how much recruiting people to go to market research screenings counts as show business, but I'm still trying to get people to go see Cocoon. You know, I still might, at the screening, you know, when I'm counting the ballots, I might, you know, the comment cards, I might see Ron Howard, you know, or, mm-hmm. you know, the filmmakers might be there,
that
you know.
Counts.
So that sort of counts, but stuff like that was how I, you know, started, and I got lucky to never have to have a real job that was, you know, outside of, you know, show business. The writing promos for a TV network, that became sort of a real job, and then that's why eventually I stopped doing it.
Still for show business, though, at least.
It was, yes.
Yeah.
And I also worked myself into the, I got paid to write and produce the promos. Then I got paid to be a voice in the promos.
Oh, you did? All right. You did voiceover, too?
Yeah.
Oh, you were, that's a nice parlay
there. You know, because it was the WB network, and the premise was, you know, there's this, you know, lot in the valley of Los Angeles where they make all these great shows, and Michigan J. Frog is like the mascot of the lot, And we came up with this idea to have, like, on MASH, the loudspeaker, or Wet Hot American Summer, or Meatballs, just loudspeaker announcements about things that are happening on the WB. And then, you know, one of the people in charge is like, Doug, do you just want to do the voice? And so I did it, you know, as an example or whatever. And they were like, that's good, that'll work. And then for, like, I don't know how long it lasted, a couple of years, I was just getting these amazing voiceover checks. Like, my salary there, like, tripled just because I was doing, and, you know, and I'd just be like, I think we need to go to the, and it was just, you know, it was just a shot of a loudspeaker, you know, up over the,
yeah, that old
school. The back lot, at the WB. So, yeah, so that was a sweet ride for a while, but then I realized, oh, I'm, you know, just standing still pretty much as a performer, you know, I'm not, you know, doing that much stand up, you know, just locally and maybe a little bit of road stuff. And I wanted to do more, acting roles and maybe, you know, I mean, all the stuff I've ended up doing since I left that job. And actually they let me go before I left it. I mean, it wasn't my idea to leave. They were like, well, we don't really see this position as being necessary anymore. And then the WB fell apart not too long, a year or two after that. But when they let me go, I wasn't like, well, now this is what I do. You know, I wasn't like, I got to go get another promo job.
But during that time, you were telling me, we were talking about before the show, that's when you got a role on Friends.
Yeah, I had to actually kind of like play hooky from my job. Like, the lot I worked on is called the ranch.
Yeah.
Because it used to be, like, it used to shoot a lot of stuff out there.
The Friends Fountain is on that damn ranch.
Yeah. Well, and that is still there. That's one of the things that's still there. And some of that neighborhood right there were like
American Beauty, I think, right?
Pleasantville and Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And lots of stuff. Small Soldiers was like, also, that was the fun thing about working on that lot is that, you know, I could just wander out of my office and go and stand and watch them, you know, shoot something interesting.
And you had that golf cart you were allowed to tool around.
Yeah, you could tool around in golf carts. But the Friends Fountain, I didn't, you know, I wasn't, I don't think I was working there yet when they shot that sequence or whatever. But that fountain is still there. And what was the point of this story?
You getting on Friends.
Oh, yeah. So I've got the Friends Fountain right outside my office at a job where I have to not tell them I'm going to audition for a part on Friends. And then I didn't really think it through because it was one of those things where they just brought in three people to audition. They were just like, let's just bring in three people that the casting director likes and we'll just go with one of them because it's only a couple of lines. And so it was me and two other dudes and they're like, we're going to tell you on the spot if you got it or not. And once we tell you you've got it, then you've got to go to rehearsal. Rehearsal's going to happen right away.
Damn.
Yeah. So within 15 minutes of being told I got the part, I'm standing there saying those lines to Jennifer Aniston.
With her, she is there.
Yeah. Yeah, because they just took
that
me right.
Never happens.
They just took me right over to the set, and they're just like, okay, let's do the scene, and we just did it like a couple of times, and then And then that was on a Wednesday, and then I didn't have to come back till Friday, but I had to be there for like 12 hours. So I gave him some excuse for that I wouldn't be at work on that Friday. And then I don't know when, maybe a few months, years, decade later, I told those guys, yeah, I ditched work to go get a part on Friends.
We just watched it.
Thanks for not noticing, guys.
That's a good scene. That's a good scene.
Well, that's the thing is they gave me that one line. My mom calls it bloomies that for whatever reason, when I say it, yeah. It makes people laugh.
Yeah.
Like I don't even, you know, I mean, I say it very enthusiastically, but I didn't really think of it as a punchline. But when we taped that scene, you know, first of all, they do the whole show in order and they shoot every scene multiple times and they take breaks to discuss punching up jokes and stuff. So it's like, the taping goes into the night. If people leave, they have people waiting outside to take their seats.
Oh, shit.
They have a warm-up person that just is constantly giving away shit because they just, you know, want to keep them there the whole time, keep them up. So my scene doesn't start shooting until 11:30 p.m. at a taping that started at like 7. And I say my line, and the audience laughs so hard and for so long that Jennifer Aniston just has to stand there and wait for the laughter to go away. It's just not, doesn't make sense.
Right,
you know,
yeah,
like you
yeah.
can't put that on TV.
Yeah.
Some guy wandering in and saying one thing and everybody falls out. And then, you know, so they go, let's do that again. And we do it the second time and they don't laugh as hard. And that's the one that, you know, that
they
used.
Used.
Yeah. But,
the honeydew take. What the fuck they used.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it was, all of it was very nerve wracking to, cause I was, you know, very excited about the show Friends and about, like, Jennifer Aniston was probably my number one crush at the time.
Yeah.
And so now I'm in this scene with her where I'm acting like an idiot and she, like, blows me off. And, I mean, I blow her off at the end of the scene, but it, you know, it looks like it's because he thinks she's, you know, blowing him or, you know, she's being mean to him or rude to him. I don't know what's going through that character's head. I would have stayed in the game. It was Jennifer Aniston looking like really, like she was really dressed up. Like she had a nice fur coat on
yeah.
and probably faux fur.
Courtney Cox standing right behind.
It was one of her better hairstyles because, you know, after the Rachel, she had a real issues with making sure that she could come up with another thing that was as good. But yeah, I probably overdid it on the goodbye hug at the end of the
at the end of the night.
No rap party.
Oh, you didn't get to go.
No, I mean she partied in the arms of Brad Pitt. I'm sure.
Oh, is that who she was?
Because they were together at the time. Like when she wasn't in a scene, she'd just be in her dressing room with Brad, and he was in there playing video games. And whenever Matt LeBlanc or Matthew Perry wasn't in a scene, they'd be in there playing video games with Brad Pitt.
Where else would you be? Right?
Ross was not invited. I wonder why.
I like you call him Ross.
Yeah, I didn't need to besmirch Schwimmer. No, he was the nicest of the boys. He's the only boy that really talked directly to me while I was there. Because you're not there for very long. You're not really with them. But here was the craziest part. A big fan of the show. Imagine you're a big fan of a show.
And it's at its height.
And it's huge. And you're there for the tape day, and you've done the scene like maybe 3 or 4 times at most. And the entire cast, which is just the 6 friends and whoever the guest stars are, so in this case it was probably like 10 or 12 people, they all just go into the makeup room while the ladies are getting their final touch-ups, and they just run, you know, without looking at a script, all the lines of the episode. So I got to just be in a room where the friends and everybody else just acted out an episode of Friends
in the
right before we were going to go do it in front of an audience.
Acting is so weird. Could you imagine if I was getting my makeup done, you were like, Ryan, I'm just going to run my hour set real quick for you, and you just started doing your fucking set while I was getting makeup. Thought it would be so weird.
Yeah, and I'm waiting for my scene is at the end of the episode,
right, yeah.
So I'm waiting through the whole thing. If I fuck up my lines in front of these people,
did you drop yours during
lines.
Your part? Did you pipe up during your part when it came in the run through?
What do you mean pipe up?
Like when you had
get
your
louder?
No, when they were doing the run through in the makeup room, were you in there and did you include your line with her? Did you do
That's
it there
That's what I'm saying.
Too?
We're all there to do
you
our lines.
You all had to do it.
We're all acting
oh my
out
God.
The
Not
show.
Not just the main characters and
yeah.
their scenes. The whole show.
The whole thing.
That is so weird. It is.
Yeah. But it's like I'm a huge fan of the show.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But I'm also like, I'm alone there because I kind of know a couple of the other actors, but I don't really, you know. There's no one to turn and be like, can you believe this?
Right, yeah.
Can you believe this shit's happening? And, yeah, and so then, you know, they also make little comments as it goes along.
Like creative criticism?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and, you know, I gathered from being there that Lisa Kudrow and Matthew Perry were the most hands-on about their lines and stuff. But at one point, Ross is saying something, and Jennifer Aniston goes, Jennifer Aniston goes, I would never be in any kind of relationship with that person. Like, she just straight up just says that she would hate Ross and not want to have anything to do with him.
That would have shattered everything if people heard that.
And then in my scene with Jennifer, I say, she says something weird that I don't understand. So then I go, I'm going to go talk to a friend. And then I walk away. And when I said that in the line reading run through, and it's all just so that they can know their lines, you know, make sure they know their lines. But so then it's not like everybody's really acting it out, but I said, I'm going to go talk to a friend or whatever I say. And then, Matthew Perry looks at Letha Kudrow and goes, he's going to go talk to a friend. Great line. I'm like, dude, I didn't write it. I just said
right.
it.
Oh, God.
But it's also
terrible.
Like, now I got to go out and sell it for the audience. So I made sure that I got a laugh.
When I'm going to go tell
fuck you,
friend.
Matthew Perry. But he was on a bunch of shit at that time, I think. I think it might have been one of his more druggier times.
I didn't think you were talking about different shows. Yeah.
And then, but then many years later, I ran into him and interacted with him a little bit, and he was super nice, but also super sober. So it was, I could feel him judging me a little bit for being a pothead.
did you drop that fucking, I didn't fucking write that line, right, bro? Your writers wrote that shit.
I let that go because I didn't necessarily disagree with him about the quality of that line.
But you didn't write it.
Yeah.
So here's what I want to ask you. How old were you? I want to go back to weed. How old were you the first time you got high? Who or what introduced you to it?
The first time I really got into it.
No, smoked. The first time you tried. Let me say that because it was a month before I got high. I got the giggles. I got the munchies. Smoking it just, on the weekends for the first month. And then one time
I'm getting cottonmouth just hearing this.
And then one time we got some weed from Portland, as I'm from Maryland originally. And man, that
you got it all the way from Oregon.
Yep. And that got me high, like high to the point I thought it was laced. I was asking people if they could hear my heart beating. You know what I mean? I was like, why are you guys not taking me to the hospital right now? I'm over here dead and you haven't done anything about it. And they're like, go downstairs and fucking chill and relax for a little bit. So how, what's the first thing that got you in it? How old were you when you tried it?
When I tried it, it was just in a circle with the hippie kids that live next door that I was just enjoying hanging out with. Just wanted to fit in and didn't really even take a hit, just sort of, or maybe I just coughed and I don't remember being laughed at because a lot of times the person that's new to it and is coughing gets people laugh, but. It all seemed pretty chill.
How old were you?
It didn't make a strong impression on me one way or the other. I was probably about 17.
Okay.
But that's the weird thing is that as a teenager, I loved stand-up comedy and stand-up comedy albums. And I would listen. I had most of Cheech and Chong's stuff memorized. And then when this big moment comes up, like here's your chance to try marijuana that your heroes do, I just, tried it. I was always so grossed out by cigarettes, and my parents smoked cigarettes constantly. Like they'd smoke with the windows rolled up in the car.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
and the air conditioning on, and like long trips.
Let's just slow it around.
We'd like drive to Arizona in a car full of fucking cigarette smoke. So it was disgusting, and so I never got into cigarettes. And then, so for whatever reason, also going to being like in the journalism and drama programs at a community college in San Diego, you'd think that'd be like everyone would be getting stoned everywhere. Yeah. But it just wasn't part of my world. I just went through the typical college drinking stuff, just a lot of parties where there was, too much drinking. And then I moved to Los Angeles and still was more just into drinking and didn't really, my friends that lived in LA at the time that were all like trying to get into show business and all encouraged me to make the move. None of them were potheads. So it took stand-up comedy for me to finally really be around people that had it and smoked it regularly. And the two people that really get all the responsibility for it were Brian Posehn and Greg Proops.
Oh, great.
Because the three of us were all on a bill together at the No Longer There Punchline in Walnut Creek, California, north of San Francisco. And they just were smoking after the show every night. And I started doing it with them. And then became like, you know, kind of probably San Francisco's biggest pot mooch. Like every time I was in San Francisco, I just... look up my friends there and smoke their weed, you know, and just a mooch in general. Like I didn't really start buying my own for a while and, regret that a little bit, but you know,
I passed on it the first couple times. I was 20, just started doing stand up and there was an older dude that, I went to his place just to, you know, he'd been doing it a while. We were going to write a little bit and stuff and he was smoking. He's like, you want some? And I was like, no. And again, same thing, like loved all the fucking Cheech and Chong shit, but said no. And then another time, says, because I didn't start smoking until I was 21. I tried, like you said, a circle. I got an ashy hit when I was 18, and I was like, oh, this is what weed is? Because I felt the same way about cigarettes. And then I was at Cal State Northridge, and this dude just walks in my room. We had hung out a couple times. He's like, I got the stickiest shit right now. And I was like, that's all right. I don't. And this shit, to this day, I two regrets. Well, maybe not. I was in Amsterdam at 16. I didn't need to smoke weed at 16, but I regret that one at Northridge because it was a nug like this and it was purple. And he took it with a piece of paper and stuck it to the fucking fridge. And I've never forgot that. I have never fucking forgot that. And I was like, God, I wish I took a hit of that fucking weed. That should have been my first one, you know. But Maryland, we called it practice weed. That's all we ever had was practice weed until the good shit started coming from the West Coast. Then we were like, here we go.
That's the other thing. It's like I just really came up in a time when, you know, there really was bad weed everywhere. Like it was really a thing.
And,
yeah, it was really like, you know, now, of course, it's starting to change quite a bit. But even as few as a few years ago, when I was traveling, people would just be like, you know, geographically, like, oh, the weed's no good there, or they're, you know, or we're currently having a weed drought or whatever, you know. Yeah, and it was always it was much trickier. Now it's just like I can't think of the last time somebody gave me something to smoke and I smoked it and went, oh, what was that? That didn't do anything.
A good point.
That was, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I say all the time, scientists are growing these damn things now. Yeah. It's, you know, farmers. I always watch Murder Mountain. Have you seen Murder Mountain?
I have not. It's pretty interesting. It scares me.
It is fucking scary.
Yeah, people are always, come to Humboldt. It's great up here.
I just did shows up
heaven on
up
earth.
There. Yeah.
Murder Mountain.
It's beautiful up there. It's gorgeous.
I have been.
And I love it.
I have been once before, but I just had no idea. It was so scary.
But some fan said, don't go to Murder Mountain. I was like, huh? And then I Googled. I was like, Jesus Christ. As we're driving through the Redwoods, I'm reading this and like, oh, my God. How many people are missing? Yeah, holy
shit. And they
shit.
Murder you where? Right when you drive in?
Right when you drive in. Oh, I owe you $50,000? I'm just going to fucking kill you. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm scared of that. I don't, because I do want to go back to Humboldt, and I feel like if I watch that, it would color my decision.
Yeah, you might want to wait till you come back from Humboldt.
Yeah, that'll be a fun thing to watch as soon as I get back.
As soon as you get back, yeah.
I'm coming, Humboldt. Don't you worry about it.
Do you still drink?
Yeah, oh yeah.
You do?
Yeah. I've gotten pretty good, though. Like, I think I should get myself a chip for this, but I think I've gone like 90 days without a hangover. Like that's
most people tell you how long they've been without a drink.
That's what I mean. I'm saying that there should be a new version where it's like, hey, I'm not an alcoholic. Like I've gone 90 days without a hangover. Because I mean, if you're a real alcoholic, you're gonna have hangovers all the time. Yeah, and that's my new, you know, and I may drop it back from there. But at least right now, I'm at the. Not drink, you know, I'm still drinking, but not enough to have a hangover or like, you know, of course now tonight I'll drink a ton and have a hangover tomorrow. But for the time being, I'm getting, I feel like I'm good at it.
You think the Cal Ripken and no fucking hangovers, bro?
Yeah. Because the drink I drink is Tito's and soda. And so if I just go give me a soda water on ice with a straw and drink it, it feels like the same thing.
Yeah.
So the trick is to just be so high all the time that I don't know. Whether I'm drinking or not. Be like, honey, order me a drink, and then wink, and I don't know. I don't know if she's getting me surprise a club soda or a Tito's and soda. And if it's mixed right, I won't know the difference.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, like, bartenders that think they're doing me a favor and pour extra Tito's, yeah. I don't like it as much. I don't want to taste it. I mean, I want to taste it in that, you know, I get a buzz going, and it's you know, there with the
soda. You want to experience the soda. You don't want to taste it.
Yeah.
Feel it.
Yeah. I want to be aware of it.
Right.
But I don't need to be all about it. These are all like just phrases you could just apply to anything.
you should make a line of bumper stickers for all this shit, dude.
For sure.
What's the worst, most drunk you've ever been?
That's a hard one to put my finger.
You said you've never been arrested, so you seem like a responsible
enjoyer. I mean, you know, when I was in junior college, I would drive, there was like a Denny's near the college, and you know, and I lived at home in I had my kind of like my own room downstairs in a two-story house, and the downstairs were just the garages, a bathroom, and two bedrooms, and so I had all of that to myself. So that's what encouraged me to not move out until I was like 22, is when I finally moved out of the house. And what was the question? Oh, yeah.
You got it?
Yeah.
This is my favorite game to play, by the way. What were we just talking about? Yeah. So, you know.
So I'd go have some drinks after a night class at a Denny's the college. But then there was still like, you know, a 5 or 10 minute drive to get home that involves some tricky, you know, maneuvers and stuff. So I do remember on more than one occasion being like, oh, I'm too drunk to be driving right now. I'm one of those people that should have got a DUI at least a dozen times in my life, maybe more. And just always, I just was lucky that I didn't hurt anyone or myself or get a DUI. But that was, you know, that was also college years, or I should say my last college year, because I was like 21 in my third year at community college. But also, there's been so much talk lately, you know, somebody wrote an op-ed about how, you know, if these progressive Democrats, if they eliminate everybody's student debt, that's a slap in the face to everybody that's paid off their student debt. And it's just like, well, yeah, but that's, you know, progress in life is a slap in the face to everyone.
Everyone.
I mean, my parents had to use a remote control. I mean, had to get up and change the channel, right? You know, or whatever.
You're flying with them now.
Yeah. I'm flying with remote controls. My parents are like, now we got to get up and change the channel still to this day. I get frustrated when, like, you know, hotel TVs and stuff, if the remote isn't working, you can't just go change the channel
on the TV.
Anymore.
That's right. You can't
just gotta not have TV. But what was the point we were making? Oh, that when playing that five things that I did for a live, five jobs game on Twitter, I wanted it to be clear that I just, you know, supported myself through junior college, and then, you know, college wasn't really an option, and now I don't have crippling student debt ever. I mean, I never had it because I went to community college and they got me as far as I needed to go, which I think that everyone needs 2 or 3 years to figure their shit out.
100%.
It just doesn't necessarily have to be at an expensive college.
Right. It shouldn't cost you 50 grand a year.
It should only be an expensive college if you want to go into law or a doctor.
I mean, I bounced around in community college for, well, I went 2 years, but bounced from like psychology to physical therapy to, I don't even remember what the fuck my last, I can't remember what my last one was. And then when I got to college, I was like, mass comm. I like entertainment. What the fuck am I doing? You know? And, but you're right. That's an expensive, you know, if you're going to switch majors and shit, I agree completely. A couple of years, you should get like a city college. And that, and plus if you transfer out, that's very affordable. You live here in California, it's really affordable. And then you're only paying a 2-year tuition on something that's ridiculous instead of doubling that for yourself.
You know?
So I agree with you on that.
I'm glad. I'm glad we're not fighting.
No, I'm tired of fighting with you.
But that's, you know, that's something I've brought up. I think anyone that wants to go into any of the, you know, the arts, you know, anything where, you know, having the degree really isn't going to get you the job. It's the skill that you have is what's really going to, you know, get you, you know, like anything like acting or singing or, you know, the arts, basically. I just want people out there to know that they can, you know, just jumping right into it is maybe not such a bad thing. Most of the greatest comics of all time started when they were in their teens.
Yeah.
You know, I feel shitty for starting at, you know, 22.
Yeah, I did my first few open mics, not even open mics. I worked at a club in Baltimore and I was 20. I did about five shows, and I didn't do stand up again until I was 27.
Wow.
Yeah, late. What age were you when you started smoking weed?
28.
I was 28. Okay.
Yeah.
That is late. I was 21 and I thought I was late.
It's about the time I was really starting to, you know, get work. You know, I was probably opening a lot of places, but I was featuring that week. Brian Posehn was the headliner. He had a truck at the time, so he'd pick up me and Greg in the city, and we'd drive out to the gig every night. And then, after every show, we'd smoke. And I think they were both post-show smokers at that point, I think. But we've all grown to become and have periods of just being... high on stage as well, you know, smoking all the time.
What was that like the first time you were high on stage? Did you enjoy it or did it not go well? Or
I think initially it was a little like, whoa, this is fun, but also it's giving me extra levels of you know, worry and fear that wouldn't necessarily be here if I wasn't high. But then, like, the thing that really got me used to it was we did a play off Broadway called The Marijuana Logs, me and two other comics. And to me, the most genius aspect of that was that it was a parody, mostly just in form rather than content, of the vagina monologues, you know, with the title Marijuana Logs, but then also it's three people sitting on stage taking turns telling stories about marijuana instead of about vaginas. But we did it the same format as them, where they, since it had kind of a rotating cast, the vagina monologues, nobody would ever memorize it. They just have it written in front of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, after several performances, I'm sure some of those actresses would, you know, do it, you know, from their mind. And, you know, but the great part, and I'd do that too, is I eventually memorize all the pieces. But the great part is knowing what's next all the time. Never having to think about, you know, what's going to come next. You just turn the page and there it is. Oh, yes, this. Okay, here we go. And you can look ahead while the other guys are talking and stuff.
Yeah.
And so that got me really used to being high on stage, because we would just get, you know, we were in a backstage with no back door. And once the house opened, we just had to sit backstage for a half hour before every show.
Oh, you're
so
just stuck.
So we're just back there smoking pot. That's right, all there was to do. Let's just get high and, you know, we had alcohol and we just sit back there and get fucked up. And then, you know, then it would be time to start the show and we'd walk out. And, it just got me really used to being high on stage and not having it bother me.
What's the percentage of times now that you're not on stage or in front of a mic? Let's just put it that way. I know we all do so many.
I'd say 1-2% maybe.
Really? Is it just because you forget it?
Wait, you thought that 1-2% was a high number?
No.
Yeah, no, long flights. But even then, you know, if you know you time some edibles correctly, you're good now. Sleep sleeping, but I sleep for like 5 or 6 hours whenever I go to sleep, no matter what time of day or night, I can like sleep for 5 or 6 hours, then wake up and start going again. And so that would probably be the longest I go without it, because I usually start in the morning. That might also change a little bit. I'm just trying to figure out what's best for me in terms of just like feeling good. And so this no hangover thing is also making me need to wake and bake less, because I'm not waking up with a headache.
Right.
You know, when I wake up with a headache, I definitely want to smoke some weed, because that will make it, if not better, it'll just make me happier about being in so much pain. So it's just a matter of, you know, finding the balance. But, you know, with the traveling I'm doing, that's the longest I go without smoking flower is being in the airport and being in the next airport.
Right.
Now that you can travel with it, I always have it when I get to a new town.
That's so nice. I'm going to take your word for it. If I get arrested, I'm fucking hitting you up.
But also, just bring
Just
bring what you'd want to have.
Like
for the time period between when you arrive there and when you're going to run into somebody who can give you more.
Exactly.
You know,
so like three.
So maybe a couple of nugs, maybe, you know, a couple of grams or something. And don't carry them in a thing that's clearly labeled that it's marijuana. Go ahead and be a little paranoid about it. Put it in a unlabeled thing, or even if it's a couple of nugs, I'll just put them inside some rolled up socks, put them in my check bag. If you're checking a bag, only anecdotally, it's never happened to me, but the worst I've heard that happens to a check bag is if they find a little weed in there, that they might keep it.
Yeah,
You know,
that's what I hear. My cousin's
a victimless
cop,
crime,
and he said they would keep all the good weed, and a lot of times after they got tested, if it wasn't a random, they'd all smoke it. Cops,
yeah,
of course, everybody. Well, brother, I know you got to get out of here.
Oh, shit.
You do. So thank you so much for coming on here. Will you one more time, whatever you want, social media, shows, whatever you'd like to promote, please.
DouglasMovies.com. It's where you go for most things me. And I can't wait to be on the Crab Feast.
Dude, I love you.
That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
I am Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to you all next week.